Drive with Julian Clover.
Getting you home.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
The Hole in the Wall at Little Wilburn was one of our best known restaurants, but despite being listed as one of the top 100 in the country by the Sunday Times, it closed last year on the expiry of the lease. The man behind it is Alex Rushmer, or was Alex Rushmer, and he's with me now in the Friday Food Club. Hello, Alex.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for coming in. I must explain that poor old Jamie, who is normally here with us on a Friday, is laid up at the moment with something nasty, presumably not food poisoning. But hopefully he'll be back with us in a couple of weeks' time. Can I quickly touch on our lead story? When something like a major credit and debit card company decides it's not going to work on a Friday night, that must be an absolute nightmare in the retail trade.
The retail trade, the hospitality trade, anybody, any time of the day and any time of the week, but heading into a Friday night, I've got a feel for anybody that's suffering. We actually had a period of about 6 weeks when we had no telephone line at all over a summer period. Phone lines went down, which meant we couldn't process any card transactions at all. We had to do everything manually and then run it all into the bank during the week afterwards. And it adds another layer of complication to an already quite complicated industry.
And that's with the possibility that somebody can come out, have a very nice meal, spent, I don't know, £100, bottle of wine in there maybe as well, then oblivious to what's been happening, finally can't pay, and forced to do the washing up or whatever you do to such people.
You've got to hope that people have got an alternative credit card.
Hope so too.
Payment method.
Yeah, goodness. Right, we're not really here to talk about that, but I thought it was worth mentioning it. Now, the Hole in the Wall, for those not familiar with the story, what happened?
So I took over the Hole in the Wall in 2011 after reaching the finals of MasterChef the year before. I had a fabulous 6 years there, worked incredibly hard and very, very proud of everything that that I was able to achieve along with a really, really fantastic team. And then by the time I initially signed a three-year lease and then signed a three-year extension to that in 2014. And then by the time I started thinking about what I wanted to happen after that extension had lapsed, I spent a long time agonizing over it, talking to my nearest and dearest and thinking about everything that I'd achieved and conversely everything that I'd had to turn down as well, from social engagements to other job opportunities.
Because he had the critical acclaim. We mentioned the Sunday Times it was, which named you in their top 100.
Yes, yeah, top 100 restaurants.
Is it just 100 or do they give you a specific number?
Well, fortunately they didn't specify.
Okay.
They just picked their 100 favourite restaurants in the country and then created a really lovely supplement to go with it. And funnily enough, that actually came out about a week after I'd had a meeting with my landlord and told him that I wouldn't be renewing the lease.
So you knew the decision at that point?
I knew the decision. I spoke to the landlord 6 months before the end of the lease and then spoke to all my staff and spoke to my suppliers and just made sure everybody knew what the story was, that it wasn't anything to do with financial difficulty or some of the more...
Had you just had enough, or was the, despite not having financial difficulties, but there's a difference, I guess, between doing okay and just bringing in that little bit extra, which then makes things a little bit more worthwhile, or indeed gives you the extra cash to, well, I don't know, hire somebody else in for a month where you can go on a nice holiday with the wife?
That certainly was a factor, and I did find that margins were being increasingly squeezed from a number of directions, and despite being there for 6 years, I was still working full-time in the kitchen. I was still doing 9, if not 10 services every week. So I was there virtually every second that the restaurant was open, every second that we were serving customers, I was in the kitchen cooking. Mm. And I loved that. But after such a long time, the sort of energy levels start to wane. And I thought about the time that I hadn't been able to spend with my wife or my family or the weddings that I'd had to turn down invitations to, and the parties that I'd not been able to go to, and the jobs that I'd not been able to take, and it was a combination of factors that led to that decision.
And those last 6 months, that must be difficult if you know that there is an end to something, yet at the same time having to continue with that enthusiasm, making sure that you still got the best deal from the suppliers, even though they, in some cases, presumably would have known that you weren't going to be there long term?
I developed a very, very good relationship with staff, suppliers, and customers over my tenure at the Hole in the Wall, and thankfully that saw me through that last half year without too much difficulty. Actually, the vast majority of my staff stayed right up until the end, and to give you an idea of the high quality of relationship I had with my suppliers, when I ran a waste food pop-up event earlier this year with Tristan Welch, all of my old suppliers donated all the produce to the effort, which was just a phenomenal experience.
Another pop-up coming up in a few weeks, which we'll talk about actually in a little while. But I'm interested almost as much as in the story of your involvement in the Hole in the Wall as to why you then want to go on and tell that story, because that strikes me as being somewhat unusual.
For some reason, the hospitality industry is shrouded both in secrecy and in sort of speculation. And I'd had a year to reflect on my experiences, and I knew from speaking to fellow chefs and colleagues that I wasn't unusual in the difficulties that I'd faced. But it's one of those almost silent topics, and you know, people know about kitchens being pressure cookers of pressure cooker environment, and chefs being bullying and violent, and they know about the long hours and they know about the difficulties. But these are unfortunately the stories that grab the headlines, and actually the vast majority of kitchens that's not the case. And I wanted to explain what my experiences were like.
So the good, along with the ultimate, the bad. It's partially bad, isn't it? But because you're obviously no longer there, even if it was your own choice. But to talk about it honestly, is that the kind of the idea, to, if you like, give a slightly different perspective to what's normally heard?
I think that's it, because people that turn up to eat and dine with us on a Friday night or a Sunday lunch when the restaurant was absolutely packed, and that was their reality. Whereas for me, I still had to be there on a Tuesday doing the prep during the day, and then on a Tuesday night and a Wednesday lunch and a Thursday lunch when we weren't necessarily packed.
There's a restaurant I know, not too far, no longer, it was in a nice place, I won't mention it by name, but it was a place I'd go from time to time, and when I first got to know it, it was busy, well, most days. It was, I think it was, it might have been open seven days a week, but gradually you saw fewer and fewer people in the windows you went by, and the days which it opened reduced as well, and that is a reflection for some restaurants, at least, isn't it? That, you know, you're popular for a while and then trends for whatever reason. The food can be just as good, yet the people still decide that, you know, the new place down the road is somewhere to try.
And restaurants and businesses close for a multitude of reasons. And I thought it was important to tell my story. And the response to it has been absolutely phenomenal, certainly from people within the industry. And I wrote about it for an industry magazine, not expecting to reach a huge audience. But it's been read all over the world from people both within and external to the restaurant and hospitality industry, and the response has been overwhelmingly positive, and people have said thank you for laying it out and explaining what it's
and
like.
Do you think you were able to give a different perspective on this simply because your route into the business in the first place is not necessarily traditional?
I think I had a very different take on it to an awful lot of people. It's not unusual for people to enter a restaurant kitchen at the age of 16 or 17, whereas I was able to circumvent probably 4 or 5 years.
So how old were you?
Training.
I don't normally ask people their age, but it's relevant to the story, so I'm going to. How old were you when you entered MasterChef?
I was 26 when I entered MasterChef. I think 26, 27.
Okay.
27 when it aired, and then I think I was 28 when I opened the Hole in the Wall. I think those numbers add up. I'm 35.
Don't ask me. It's a math question. You never get an accurate response from this side of the desk. So that kind of, you know, still obviously is still a young man. So the next stage, I suppose, is what are you, other than the pop up, which we'll chat about in a moment or two? Yeah. What you know, another restaurant at some point?
First and foremost, I want to be in the kitchen. I really love cooking. And I miss service. I've been lucky enough to travel with my job over the last 7 or 8 months. I've cooked in the Swiss Alps, and I've just got back from a stint cooking in.
So your job now is what?
So I'm working as a consultant chef at the moment, so 2 months in the Swiss Alps, and then I've just come back from a month in Ethiopia, as well as helping out an eco lodge in the Simien Mountains.
And what do you serve there?
Well, it was a combination of Ethiopian food, which was a cuisine that I was completely unfamiliar with, and was just an absolute joy to learn something so new and so different. And then it was a sort of a program of cultural knowledge exchange. So I was teaching English food and English techniques and kitchen management. And in return, I got to learn all about how to cook injera, which is the fermented flatbread, and some fantastic vegetarian dishes. So for 180 days of the year, anybody that follows Ethiopian Orthodoxy is vegan. They're called fasting days. There's no meat, no meat products eaten at all. And 55 of those days fall before Easter, and I was there, so 2.5 weeks that I was there, everybody was vegan. It was great to just work with such amazing vegetables and produce.
My guest is Alex Vashman. We will talk some more to Alex after the travel. Friday Food Club, and my guest is Alex Vashman, who has been talking about times past, but we're going to look at time's future now, I think, because you've got a pop-up which is taking place in a couple of weeks' time.
I do.
Where and when?
I'm going to be running a pop-up restaurant at the Cambridge Distillery in Grantchester. And the first night will be the 13th of June, and it's running the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday of that week. And then the following week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So final night is the 23rd.
How is it? Because presumably you roll up and effectively take over somebody's kitchen for week and a bit, or the two weeks of the period. Now, I was with Jamie Saturday night last at the Shed and Load for his charity event, which raised, incidentally, raised a little over £1,800 for Headway in Cambridgeshire, which is fantastic cause, and helped, actually, I must say, by Carol on the raffle, who just managed to sell absolutely all of the tickets going. We couldn't make the draw because she was busy selling another. But Jamie went in with some of his colleagues, and that was a kitchen which he'd looked around, but he hadn't cooked in it before. It must be challenging.
Well, we're facing a greater challenge in that there isn't actually a kitchen at the distillery, so we're having to bring in a kitchen. We're having to hire a kitchen for the 2 weeks. So we're gonna turn the distillery showroom into a restaurant.
So the first question then is, oven? Do you have to bring the oven in, or is there something?
We have to bring the oven. We have to bring the fridges. We have to bring the sinks, the pot wash, the extraction, the burners, the fryers. Absolutely everything.
I assume there are companies who will hire you these things because of the number of pop-ups which are around. Presumably, there are companies which have popped up,
and companies. They also do event catering, and they do wedding catering, and they do festivals. So these guys are.
The request isn't as unusual as it first seems. Then
no, it does. It sounds a little strange, but you know, as you sort of dig under the surface a little bit, and there are companies that specialise in this sort of thing. Thankfully,
yes. And if you don't mind me asking this one, how about hygiene rules? How do you deal with that one? Obviously, I'm sure your kitchen will be clean. It's the question of proving it.
So all these kitchens are that they've been signed off. They've been officially signed off by Environmental Health, and it's transported as a single self-contained unit.
And it's like moving house. The removal van will pull up outside of the distillery, and in will come a kitchen and extractor, and followed by the ingredients, presumably.
Yeah, once everything's up and running, once the fridges are down to temperature, we can start filling them with delicious, delicious food.
And what sort of things are you going to be serving?
So the menu that we've devised is inspired by the range of botanicals that Will and Lucy Lowe use in their range of gins. So they have a range of several gins, and we're using each one to inspire a different course. So we're using an awful lot of foraged ingredients. We're using some very, very local ingredients. We're going to be using nettles. We're going to be using blackcurrant leaf. And then we're going to be using some really, really good quality locally farmed ingredients as well. So we're going to be using some duck and some sea reared trout. As well, which is a fantastic ingredient, great alternative to salmon. The twist is that for a gin to qualify as a gin, it must contain juniper. It's the common ingredient to every single gin. So we've decided to take a riff on that, and we're including juniper in every single one of the six dishes that we've devised.
Oh, goodness. And I guess in some, the flavour will come out more than it does in others.
That's it, yeah. And sometimes it'll just be a whisper and a hint, and other times it'll be front and centre of the dish.
And will people be able to have a tiny bit of gin maybe with it as well?
I think it would be rude not to sample the fabulous wares of the distillery. So we're doing Will, who is currently, as well as being a master distiller, Will is currently training for his master of wine as well. So he has put together the drinks offering to run alongside the menu that myself and Lawrence, who was my sous chef at the Hole in the Wall, have devised.
So this will be, it's tricky because I guess you'd want to bring in your favourite tea, but some of them might be doing something else by now.
Thankfully, quite a few of them have ended up working for the distillery.
So oh, that's useful. Oh, that's a good connection to get you
been,
in there
it's
as
been
well.
Very, very useful, yeah. So I'm really looking forward to working with two or three of the guys from the Hole in the Wall again. So it's been almost a year now, but we've seen each other, we've stayed in touch. And
did you feel, I guess you do hear some stories, nice stories, a family feel really in the kitchen, is there? Would you say that's true?
It really does. You end up spending so much time together, and one thing that was very, very important to me was we'd all sit down, kitchen and front of house, we'd sit down at 5 o'clock every day before service, and we'd all eat together. We'd have what we call family meal. which was a lovely thing to do, and something that no matter how busy the kitchen was, no matter how busy the restaurant was going to be that night, we always made sure that we would sit down for at least half an hour and just share some food together.
That sounds great. We're winding things up here, unfortunately, Alex. How do we, if somebody wants to book, how do they do that?
I'm very pleased to say that six of the nine nights that we're doing are now sold out, but there are some tickets available for the midweek nights. They are all available on Eventbrite. There is a link on my Twitter feed, and I'm at JustCookIt on Twitter.
That's very good. Alex Rushmer, thank you very much. Good
thank
luck
you.
with the pop-up, and thank you as well for telling us those stories about the Hole in the Wall. We must take your leave, our leave of you now. We'll quickly hurtle through the travel. A14 eastbound, very slow there, still between 23 and 24. Also the westbound carriageway between 31 and 29. Caxton Gibbet on the A428, the A505 at Flint Cross. M11 southbound between Junction 10 at Duxford and Junction 9, Saffron Walden. And also the A10 Ely Road going northbound at Chittering as well. On the rails, just be warned, bus service replacing trains between Ely and Northampton Ely and Peterborough because of that defective bridge at Maney. Back here for Drive at 4 o'clock on Monday afternoon. In the meantime, I must point you in the direction of Strawberry Fair. Our coverage begins at 11 o'clock in the morning, and I'll be joining Linda for the evening shift between 7 and 11 tomorrow night. Have a good weekend.